We're ready to start. And the Bible verse that serves as the theme for our hospitality house is Hebrews 13:2. I've got that spelled wrong. I'm embarrassed here. Do not neglect. I'm sorry. Do not neglect to show hospitality. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unaware. And if you want to discuss that further, look at the story in Genesis 19, the story of of when the angels came to Lot's house and the men of Sodom wanted them to come. There was a curse placed on them, but people who are aware of Jewish history say that the curse came because of their lack of hospitality. And very often that particular portion of scripture is used to support us being against homosexual people, when really the issue is one of hospitality. I want to say something about our prison system. Our South Dakota State Prison is located in the southeastern corner of South Dakota, about as far away from any other place in South Dakota as you can get. We're right in the corner of Iowa and Minnesota and South Dakota. And you can just travel just a few miles east of Sioux Falls or south of Sioux Falls and you're in Iowa. We're 200 miles from Aberdeen. That's in the northern part of the state, north central part of the state, where many of the cases are tried, and the men then are shipped from Aberdeen area down to Sioux Falls. We are 300 miles from Rosebud and Pine Ridge Indian reservations, and we are 400 miles from Rapid City, which is in the western part of the state. Now, I would like to create a scene scenario for you. Here are some chairs up here. Okay. Fine. More chairs here. That's good. It's all chairs first. I'd like to have you imagine that you are coming to the prison to visit someone. And you're an observant person, you're a member of a prominent church in the area, and as you come there to the visit room, you see a Native American woman who because her husband is in prison here, has come. He married her after, along with her three children. And now they have two children of their own. And these are little kids, all preschool, okay? And as you are standing in line in the visit room, the officer asks her, are these so-and-so, let's say, are these Russell Eagle Feather's children? Well, two of them are. What about the other three? Well, these were my children before I married Russell. Well, I'm sorry, we have a policy here that only blood relatives can visit. And so the woman has traveled 300 miles to visit her husband, Russell. She has these three little kids that are not blood relatives of Russell. She wants to see Russell. What does she do? She has to tell these children to cross this busy Russell Street to go and sit in their car while she is visiting. Now, you've seen this, okay? Now, later on, when you leave the prison, you take one of the main streets, which leads you past this small city park, and you notice this woman rolling out some sleeping bags here and having them kind of a small meal on a picnic table, and you realize this is where she's going to spend the evening. You know that this area is close to the Union Gospel Mission, where there are a lot of transients, a lot of the street people. It's really a very unsafe place at night. The next time that you visit the prison, you notice another car, maybe with an Aberdeen license, but you notice the woman with her children, small children, staying in the car. This is be the place where they stay all night because they have no place else to do. Now, as a member of a prominent church, what would you do? Would you have any concern about this sort of thing? What does your heart tell you? Does your heart tell you we've got to do something about this? Yeah. Your heart tells you we've got to do something about this because, and then later on, come November, December, you go and visit the prison again, and the visit room is uncharacteristically empty. Empty because it's too cold to stay in the car at night, or too cold to sleep out in the park. And so rather than to risk your children's health and yourself, you stay home and you don't visit. And thus, inmates over and over again dread winter coming because they know that for many of them will be the end to their visits. And studies have shown that families that can stay together, that when the man is released, is least likely to re-offend. When I first came to the prison in 1990, about in 91, the Protestant chaplain Dennis Toom and I took a poll among all of the prison inmates. And we discovered, as we looked at the situation, that regardless of how strong the marriage was when the man entered the prison, the average length of that marriage was 3 years. And it dissolved simply because of situations where people couldn't remain in contact, things got tough at home, and things happen. Okay, so what do you do? What do you do? What would you do if this were true in your community?
Start a hospitality room or a house, yeah. Or have emergency services available for vouchers for hotel rooms or something like that.
Yeah, I would hope that you would do that. Yeah. Maybe to have vouchers where this poor family who stayed in the car could go over here to one of the city's motels and stay for the evening. Or maybe what you would do also is to produce a brochure that would list where they could get a free meal. We have downtown here a marvelous agency called The Banquet, where supper is served in the evening. But many of these people coming from here have no idea that this is available for them. Nor do they know that they could stay at the Union Gospel Mission, which is just a few feet away from the city park. We also have another organization by the Roman Catholic Church called the St. Francis House. The problem with that is that they can come and stay. There's no problem there. But they have to leave by 7 a.m. in the morning. Now, if visiting hours are only once in the afternoon and once in the evening, what is a woman with several small children going to do during that interim? Okay. And so I would hope that this would make you aware that there are strangers probably in your midst who are poor. We in South Dakota incarcerate the poor at a much higher rate than we do those who can afford good representation. The percentage of people in our prisons, 76% white, 22% Native American, and 2% black and Hispanic. But in South Dakota, because of our racist attitudes towards the Native Americans, we incarcerate probably about twice as many Native Americans who are convicted of the same crime as a white person. It's just one of those realities that we live with in South Dakota. Any questions there? Any comments? Yes, sir.
Why the restriction at 7 a.m.? I guess they know the same things you know. Why would they have that restriction at that house?
What they want to do, the house is also available for transients who come, and they want people out looking for a job.
And it's really not set up well at all for people coming in.
No, it really isn't.
But if they were, couldn't they identify themselves as a visitor and have a different rule for that?
No, it doesn't work that way. We've tried talking to the board about that, and we were kind of running up against a blank brick wall. Over here, when I first came to the prison, there was an abandoned house, a beautiful cut stone structure made back in the early 1900s, made for the associate warden. But it had been abandoned for over 30 years. I approached the Department of Corrections. Would there be a chance for a nonprofit organization to come in, renovate that place, and make it available for these families? They wrote back and said, this building has been condemned. It will soon be torn down. One of the reasons we don't want anybody dealing with it is state property, and there's a lot of asbestos in it. And so we aren't going to be doing anything with that home, with that house, but dismantling it. 3 months after I got that reply, here the prison Department of Corrections is remodeling the house to a tune of over $1 million for a private organization called Pheasant Land Industries. It's kind of interesting how things work out. Well, I carried this dream with me of having someplace. We need to have someplace. We need to respond as a church, as Christians, to these people who are coming from far away and have no place to stay. And one evening, some of you attended one of my sessions called Wait, We Are Inmates Too. The unseen inmates, the families of inmates. We meet on the first and third Tuesdays of every month. I invited a lady by the name of Anne Marie Rossi to come. Anne Marie is a fine Christian lady, member of one of our larger churches in Sioux Falls, but she is also a psychotherapist. And I invited her to come to share resources with family members who have loved ones in prison. And I said, give these women tonight some insight into survival skills. How can they survive this experience? And as these women told their story, Anne Marie Rossing, she was like a sponge, she just took it in. And she said, on my way home that night, and I had talked to her before about this dream of having a hospitality house, she said, on the way home that night, I was overpowered so much by a vision, this is something we've got to do, that I couldn't even drive my car. I had to pull off over the side of the road. The vision was so strong, we've got to do something. And as a result of that, we now have what we call Family Connection Hospitality House. And I'm going to show you this. You know, when you cannot bring Muhammad to the mountain, you bring the mountain to Muhammad. And I could not bring the hospitality house to us, but I could bring to you the chairman of the board of directors. His name is Mike Flynn, and he's a very important businessman in Sioux Falls, but he too got caught up in this thing.
You would think that Sioux Falls would really be behind it because not Sioux Falls, but the prison town would really be behind it because it would take the indigents off the streets, essentially, yeah. Make it a safer place.
Idea for Family Connection really began about 5 years ago. Our founder, whom I've already mentioned, Anne Marie Rossman, is a mental health therapist here in Sioux Falls. 5 years ago, Anne Marie was invited to come and speak to a group called WAIT. WAIT, W-A-I-T, is an acronym which stands for We Are Inmates Too. The group consists of wives of prison inmates. Anne Marie attended that meeting, spoke, and then sat back and listened as these women poured out their stories to her. This is what she heard. She heard stories of families where, in many cases, the main income earner in that family was taken away and put in prison, leaving behind a wife and children with little or no income. Many of these families had a long distance to travel to come to visit their loved one in the penitentiary, and it often takes every nickel they can scrape together just to pay for the gas to get here and the food to eat while they're here. They would often end up sleeping in their cars. Or if they're lucky, they might find a room in one of our homeless shelters, in which case they're required to get up early the next morning and leave the shelter, so that they're left wandering the streets with small children until visiting hours begin at the penitentiary. Faced with such a plight, any hope, any dignity that these women have left is gradually eroded. So where are they to turn for help? The answer, they have no one to turn to. They have no one to help them. They have no one to speak for them. And why not? We live in a country that prides itself on helping those in need. And we Midwesterners in particular consider ourselves to be very caring and friendly. So why aren't we still stepping into that breach? Well, I think part of the answer to that is that nobody is aware of the problem. Nobody realizes the hell on earth that these families go through every day, and nobody is aware because the families themselves keep it quiet. You see, these wives, these sons, and these daughters face the shame and the stigma on a daily basis of being a convict's wife, a convict's son, a convict's daughter. That's something they would rather hide than seek help for. When I first heard this story, and I love the way that Anne Marie put this, she said that her blinders came off that evening listening to that WAIT group. I know when I first heard my blinders came off, whereas before, I had only seen that inmate and the harm that he had caused to society. I now also see the wife and the children left hurting, yet invisible on the outside of the prison walls. And those blinders will never fit well again. Once God has opened our eyes to something, we cannot close them again on what He has revealed to us. That's all of our history and our purpose. Now on to the questions that some people ask when they first hear about Family Connection. And the question that I prefer to address right up front is this. Why should we help the family of an inmate? I mean, this guy committed a crime against his family. Why should we help his family? Well, my answer is this. The reality is that the family did not commit the crime. The inmate did. He is being punished. The only thing the family is guilty of is love. I ask you to look at this situation through the eyes of the children. A child doesn't understand that their father did something wrong, and even if they do understand, they don't care. Children love unconditionally. Even if that parent is not perfect and who among us is, that doesn't change that child's love. They love Dad anyway. So Family Connection is trying to make that child's life a little bit better. And yes, the inmate does benefit indirectly from the work that we do. But we believe the results from Family Connection go far beyond helping that individual family. There's been a lot of discussion in recent years that the core problem in American society today is the breakdown of the family. Many of the problems we face as a society can be traced to that root cause. The fact is, 70% of married inmates are divorced within 3 years of incarceration. 70% divorced within 3 years. The average age of these inmates is from 26 to 30 years old. And what that means is a lot of young children being raised without fathers. What that means is a lot of broken families. If these women have the guts and the gumption to try to hold their families together through that shame and that stigma that they face, we believe they should be upheld and affirmed rather than judged and cast aside. If family connection can help keep just one family together, just one, think of the ripple effect as each individual life in that family goes through their lives, touching others in a more positive way. The model of family connection is keeping families together while they are apart. Keeping these families together benefits the wife. It benefits the children. It benefits the inmate. And it benefits me, and it benefits all of you. Because an inmate who is released from prison to an intact family is less likely to recommit a crime against society. A crime against me or my loved ones, or a crime against any one of you or your loved ones. And with the high divorce rate in this country, many of us right here are all too familiar with the benefits to children of being raised in a two-parent family versus a single-parent family. A child who is raised without a father is 9 times more likely to drop out of school. A child who is raised without a father is 10 times more likely to use drugs. Family connection is trying to keep that from happening to these kids. Another question we often hear, what can we do to help? I would humbly suggest 3 ways you can show your support for events through life and health connection. First and foremost, we ask for your prayers. We are very much a Christian-based ministry, and we believe that it is God's will to do the work that we are performing. In that work, your prayers are the most powerful tool that we have. Second, we're always looking for volunteers. People can stay at the house during the evening and overnight hours. People who are handy at fixing up older houses like ours. And finally, if you're able, we appreciate any financial support that you can provide. Family Connection subsists solely on private contributions and grants. Anne-Marie and I both strongly believe that it is God's will to do the work we are doing. In that regard, I want to share with you a quick story. Back in 1889, over 100 years ago, the South Dakota legislature passed a law which said that you had to be a resident of South Dakota for only 90 days before you could get a divorce. By 1891, just 2 years later, the city of Sioux Falls was well on its way to earning an international reputation as a divorce mecca. People were traveling here from all over the country to get a quick divorce because of that law. In that same year, 1891, our country underwent a severe economic recession. It was the worst recession in 20 years, yet the city of Sioux Falls was unaffected. In fact, the economy here was booming. The population was growing, new businesses were starting up left and right, and new houses were popping up all over the city, including a beautiful 4-bedroom house right downtown here on the corner of 7th and Minnesota Avenue. The first use for the Family Connection House was as a boarding house where travelers could come and stay while they were waiting to get a quickie divorce. Of course, now the house is being used to help keep families together. Some would call that irony a coincidence, but Anne-Marie and I believe that God has a wonderfully huge sense of humor, and he's using Family Connection to pull a fast one on the whole Prince of Darkness. I opened with a quote from Scripture, and I'm going to conclude with it. I mentioned that the sign in front of the house has a picture of an angel on it. That angel comes from the 13th chapter of Hebrews and gives us yet another reason for the work that we do at Family Connection. Hebrews says, "Keep on loving one another. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing, Some have entertained angels without knowing it. We at Family Connection hope we have the opportunity to house many, many angels in the years to come.
But it is an irony. We feel, but also a sense of the humor God has that this house that was once used to house people who had come to Sioux Falls for a quick divorce, the breakup of their marriage, the breakup of their home, is now being used in an effort to keep families together. The theme, if you remember it, was helping families stay together while they are apart. One of the things we have increased our ministry, remember I told you about these children, unless they are a blood relative, they cannot visit. And so we have offering now in our hospitality house daycare for these children. And then in addition, we have hired a full-time worker who will be working, who is working with children of inmates in Sioux Falls, and she works through our schools. And it's been really surprising, you know, when the Barb Bartley first went to schools to talk about having a program for specially designed to help children cope with the fact that their dad is in prison or their mom is in prison, because we have both a women's prison and a men's prison in South Dakota, got very few responses. But then as she continued, more and more, she has now in several of our city schools, elementary schools, between 20 and 25 students who have a loved one in prison in a variety of schools in Sioux Falls. And then on the evenings that we have our weight support group, the first and third Tuesdays of the month, she is there to attend to the needs of the children who these parents bring along with them when they come to visit the home. Questions or comments?
What percentage of families, how many are not able to get into the home because it's full?
That's been not hardly ever a problem. We ask for reservations 48 hours in advance, and they cannot just come and show up at our doorstep. If they have not made a reservation, they cannot stay.
So how do they know that it's available?
Well, we have in all of the visit rooms of the prison system, we have in South Dakota not just one building, we have several buildings and different sites. In all of the visit rooms, we have brochures available that tell about this, because the men are transferred all over the state and then they come back. Our trustee unit is in Sioux Falls, so maybe they've been at one of the other institutions, but now they've earned their trustee status, so they come back to Sioux Falls. And rarely do we have people, and there are very stringent rules, too, with our hospitality house. We allow no drinking. There is no smoking inside the prison, inside the house, although on the porch on the outside they can smoke, but they have to be back by a certain time, simply because of
different rules we have, and they cannot come if it's obvious they've been drinking.
So they don't find out until their first visit?
No. Every new, now, since about a year ago, every new inmate during orientation has our hospitality house director plus Ann Burkhart, the director of the children's program, make a presentation during their orientation. And then they are each given one of our brochures that they can send home to their family.
I want to make a statement here.
Orpha is, this is my wife Orpha, and she's volunteered at the hospitality house.
When we were trying to find a place that they could have, I was in one meeting where we met with a couple of realtors in Sioux Falls wanting to know if they knew, if they could come up with some place that we could, there was a place available or a piece of land that a house could be moved into. And one of these realtors, who owns an awful lot of stuff in Sioux Falls, said, well, we're building a new motel. And so I said, but if I've come from across the state and I've had this, I have limited funds for staying in a motel and feeding my family, could I afford to stay in this motel? And he thought a little while and he said, no, I guess not. So, in the minds of a lot of people, they don't realize that how poor these people are. And if you've committed your crime in South Dakota, that's where you're in prison. So there are people come from Iowa and Minnesota and other places, too, from far away.
Now we have a saying, do your crime in South Dakota and you'll do your time in South Dakota.
Very seldom will exchange prisoners so that that person can go back to his home state to do it. So there are... there was one woman the other day when I volunteered who was there from overseas who had come to see her husband. And a story there, when the first director we had said she was a wonderful person, but she herself had kind of a preconceived notion. And one of the very first people that stayed there was a woman who came up from Kansas and had a Native American last name. And Anne said she didn't fit my picture at all. She was a college professor and French background. But because of her coloring and because of her last name, when she could afford to stay in a motel. But when she came and stayed in motels, they did not treat her well. And she said to Anne when she was going to leave, aren't you going to check to see that I'm not stealing anything? And Anne said no. And that's what happened to her in the motels in town. Because of her last name and because of her coloring, they were suspicious. And that's why a lot of these people, even though they could afford to stay in a motel, prefer the hospitality house, because here they're with others like themselves, here they feel welcome, here they feel, we're cared about. And so it's not just those that really can't afford it, but just because it's community, where they do them.
We do ask if they can afford it to leave $5 per evening for themselves and their family. And the refrigerator is always stocked. We have one farmer just across the border every fall bring in a freezer full of beef. He's butchered. The response has been really great. And it's interesting how... Well, I want to say it's interesting how God works. Okay, when we opened this house, we had absolutely nothing. I mean, it was bare. Where do we get the furniture? I mean, we were in debt over our heads in this purchase price. Well, we put out a call, and there were different replies. Come and get our stove. We're going to give you our stove. Come and get our refrigerator. Different parts of town. We went and got the stove. It was a pastel green. Okay. Went over to this was in the eastern part of Sioux Falls. About 3 miles west, we were asked to come and pick up a refrigerator that somebody, guess what color it was? Pastel green. And the cupboards were just, I mean, they were old wooden plywood cupboards painted white, and they were, the doors weren't fitted right and so on. And here was a company in Sioux Falls that makes cupboards, and they had a lot of seconds that weren't being sold. They called up and said, you can have these cupboards. Another company, Reclaimed Freight, asked us to come out and, they asked us to come out, Anne-Marie and another member of our board went out there, and they said, maybe it'd be better if you would come and see our house, see what would fit. And they completely furnished that house with davenports, with easy chairs, and an oak dining room table with six chairs, reclaimed.
And great. All the bedroom, the bedroom furniture, queen, some queen size, some single, some double beds, but bedrooms.
And the WELCA organization of South Dakota was the one that really got us started. I mean, at a state synod convention of the WELCA, they voted to give us $10,000 to start. I mean, that was what we started with. And then they put out the word we could use quilts, blankets, and they came with just marvelous with the response to that. And then what we also do is to send home, because many of these people are so poor, we send home toiletries, soap, toothpaste, shampoo, a bag of things that they can use, and then a lunch that they can take on the way home.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any trouble getting a mortgage?
No.
Banks were.
Yeah. Well, you said it was a contract.
Contract for deed with the owner. But now the owner has called in his contract, and we refinance the home, and it's no problem.
Good.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
I have a question for you. Going back to an earlier statement, you said prisoner receives an orientation. The members of the family also receive some type
no.
of they, nothing at all. They're
nothing at all. And if you were at the meeting last evening on this play, this is what's so frustrating for so many of the family members. They hear nothing from their inmate. And they don't know when visiting hours are. The last time they saw their inmate was probably in the courtroom when the sentence was levied and they were let off. It's so frustrating for family members because of that. And for 2 weeks, at least 2 weeks, depends on what their sentence is and what their classification is, how long they stay in orientation. But for all the time that they are in orientation, 2 weeks up to a month, they are not permitted any contact with their family. You talk about the dehumanization of our prison systems. And that's part of it. Yes, ma'am.
I was just wondering what I've never heard mention of the female prisoners and their families. Do you have accommodations for the husband, brother, or whatever that would be to, you know, bringing her children? Is there any place for them
to go? No, we do not. The women's prison is right smack dab in the center of the state, here, South Dakota. It started, the prison opened, women's prison opened 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there is absolutely no facility there. And what we are doing through our congregation there is offering a family who comes a voucher at a motel.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all that we're doing so far. The state, interestingly enough, has provided a house on the campus of the women's prison for mothers who have little children. And they can spend the weekend there with them
mm-hmm.
in that house. However, in advance, they have to pay for the food that they'll use and pay for the diapers that are going to be used or any other products that are going to be used. That has to be money up front before the family can come.
And they can't afford it.
And they can't afford it. It's just another example of how the powerful take advantage of the poor and the weak. And another thing about South Dakota, and I don't know why it is, if a woman is pregnant when she comes to the prison, she has 48 hours after the birth of the child to relinquish it.
To relinquish parental rights?
Right.
She has no choice?
She has no choice. And Orth and I were somewhat involved here.
And she was married?
Yes. But recently we had a situation in Sioux Falls. She was in the prison in Pierre. She had 48 hours to give up this child, or the state would put it out for adoption. And they called the grandparents. The grandparents were poor black people that came through, made it to Pierre on the bus, and on the way back had enough money to make it as far as Sioux Falls. Then what? Well, the pastor of the women's prison in Pierre called me. And so we had people meet them at the bus when they came into Sioux Falls, took them up to the hospitality house, grandparents of this little child, and they stayed overnight, and then we gave them bus money to make it back to Milwaukee.
With the child?
Pardon me?
With the child?
With the child. Yes.
Apparently there's no way to convince the powers to be that a very large percentage of these prisoners are going to be their neighbors soon.
Exactly.
And wouldn't it be nice if they were somehow rehabilitated rather than made to be bitter about things?
Yeah. Now, Charles Colson, who is the director of prison fellowship, offered a quote that I have memorized. He said, take any group of people, and I don't care how well-educated they are or how sophisticated they are, but put them in a 6x9 cell 23 out of 24 hours. Remove from them significant opportunities to be with their families. If you give them a job, make it so menial that it is simply repetitious and has no meaning at all for them. Take away from them opportunities for education, and I will guarantee you that when that person leaves the prison, that person will be much more intent about getting even with society than in contributing to it. And yet, our whole country is engrossed in this idea, let's punish them. Punish them. Our former warden, Warden Solem was his name, fine Christian man, member of First Lutheran Church in Sioux Falls. I hated to see him leave our prison, but he said this, we used to send people to prison as punishment. Now we send them in this country to prison for punishment. And the whole pendulum has swung towards punishment. Lock them up, warehouse them, and then somehow we expect these people to leave the prison responsible, ready to take a responsible law-abiding place in society. 42% of all incoming inmates in the South Dakota prison are functionally illiterate. Mm-hmm. Now, you take one of these people, lock them up for X number of years, and then turn them loose when they can't even read it well enough to fill out a job application. What happens to these people?
Don't they have a chance to get the GED? Don't they have a chance to get
educational program in the prison?
There is a minimum opportunity for them to get a GED. But not everybody can. I mean, you have to be in the prison system so long before you can go to get your education system and get involved in the school system there. Very often what these people do, they resort to survival tactics that they survived on before they came into prison, just to survive. One man who came to prison Native American. I knew him well, but he was crippled. He was normal from the waist up, but his legs had never developed, so he was always in a wheelchair. He was released from prison, no place to go, no education, and so what he did was to throw a brick through a plate glass door, rolled his wheelchair into the door, and waited for them to come get him, so he had a place to stay.
This treatment sounds criminal.
Talk about criminal treatment. We had a couple weeks in South Dakota where the temperature was like 90-something and the humidity was as high. There is no air conditioning in the building that we have our services in, five tiers. And no air conditioning, no fans. Some of them put in requests for fans because one of the businesses was offering fans, but they were having to wait. I mean, they didn't get enough. So at our services, some of these men sat there fanning themselves, because it was hot as could be in our worship area too, with cardboard like this. And I said, prison issue? And they said, oh no, we had to go to the commissary and pay 70-some cents for this tablet so we could tear off the paper and use this cardboard for our fan. That's the only way that they could survive, was to have that little hunk of cardboard. No, you know, we could go home to our air-conditioned houses, and they went up on the fifth floor tier and waved their cardboard.
The prison used to allow men to have these little individual ice chests. They could go downstairs. We have five tiers, as my wife mentioned, but down at the bottom tier they have an ice-making machine. They could fill these ice chests with ice, and then they had these bottles with the ends on, you know, even this. And so they'd, inside there, they lay their pop cans and their water bottle and have a cold drink. Well, prison confiscated all those for security reasons. Everything is for security reasons. And so they aren't able to do that anymore. And some of the guys use paper sacks and try to keep them together long enough to get upstairs, and then they put a stopper in their sink and put the ice there, and then the pot and lay there.
You probably should mention that the hospitality house is a woman and her children, boys up to the age of 12. Yeah. We can't. That's the only accommodation. Trying to buy the piece of land that's between us and the neighbor that's landlocked because of the hospitality house. There's no access to it. But the men who own it are keeping
our three lawyers.
And they're keeping the price up so high that as yet the hospitality house hasn't been able to buy it. But their dream is to be able to then add a facility so that the men coming can also stay, but at the time it's
like a grandfather, for example. An old man coming to visit his son has no place to stay.
Or a brother,
somebody in the family, a blood relative. But mainly our main concern has been about the grandfather in the Lakota tradition is so very, very important to the person. And they often come, but they have no place to stay. And we would hope that we could enlarge our ministry at the hospitality house to also be able to offer housing to the men. Mm-hmm. But so far, I don't quite understand our insurance. Our insurance does not want men above the age of 12, males, in our house. And so. Okay, but I hope, folks, so many communities now have prisons in them. Prison is big business. Building prisons is great for the private sector, and the private sector is putting a lot of pressure upon Department of Corrections to build more prisons. The impetus for building more prisons doesn't always come from your Department of Corrections. There's a lot of lobbying done towards this by the private sector, because it's a big business. construction and so on. But I hope that you become aware of these people who are so often unseen, who have just tremendous needs. And if you ever come to Sioux Falls, I hope that you will visit our home, our hospitality house. And I regret that I did not have brochures here, but I would have liked to have had you take them. Thank you very much.
Thank you.